So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It's our happy hour, and while some people are really excited that they still get carded when they go to the grocery store and buy alcohol or if they're at a restaurant, other people are like, we want to be out of that. Will we ever be out of that? The funny joys of life. It's our happy hour. Thanks for joining us today. And breaking news over the weekend was that the Chaldean Catholic Church, St. Peter's Cathedral, here in San Diego was vandalized. And my former classmate from both undergrad and grad school, Father Simon Asaki from St. Peter's Chaldean Catholic Church in San Diego, will be joining us just a little bit to talk about what's happened, what the latest update is at their church, but how we can respond. And I think this is important because I'm receiving a lot of information from people saying, you know, I'm frustrated, I'm feeling down because of the state of the world, the riots, what's happening in the church, and it's impacting my bottom line. It's impacting my happiness. And so I look forward to discussing this with Father Simon Asaki, because our hope is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth. And we shouldn't allow our joy to be removed from who we are and how we interact with the world. So stay tuned. That's coming up here Monday during our happy hour. What should the Catholic response to toxic people be? We're going to talk about that a little deeper than you normally would. It's not just about eliminating toxic people and environments that we're in. It's about what we should be doing, how we should interact as Catholics for a wholesome, well, kind of centered sense of self, but also to help respond in a sense to those others as well. So today we're diving into everything from lessons from life coaches on happiness to toxic people to handling the state of affairs in the church, the world, and our personal lives. Dig in, buckle up. It's going to be a great happy hour ahead. Has your inability to say no made you less happy? Are you even able to say no? Sometimes I know that I've been there where I'll lose myself completely, whether it's trying to please others, just not feeling capable of saying no. It's easy. And it's not just the perfectionists who say no. And it's not just the pushovers who say, it's not just perfectionists who say yes all the time, nor is it the pushover who's always saying yes and just doing what other people want. So the goal here is we want to develop in the midst of maybe you're a yes man all the time. You're constantly saying yes to people. The goal here that we want to develop in talking about this is to have a state of emotional integrity. We have this issue, I think, in our culture where the emotional life for both men and women have not been developed. And on one side, for some people, it kind of is suppressed until it implodes and then explodes. And then for others, they just go with their emotions and that dictates everything that happens. Maybe you are one of those people who is told, don't show your emotion. We have to overcome this desire to always please others or our fear of letting people down. So the goal here is to free yourself so that you can actually do things and mean it. And have your acts, those things that you do, those things you say yes to, the people you interact with, for you to be more virtuous in those situations. In fact, if we look at Catholic teaching on morality and ethics, if we look to Thomas Aquinas and Aristotle, something's very clear. And this was a turning point for me with regard to the whole topic of saying yes all the time. Just because you say yes all the time doesn't make you a better person. It doesn't even make you a good person. Because if you're doing something but for the wrong reasons, the act itself isn't virtuous. In other words, you're not really growing from it. So if you're doing something to please someone, to make someone happy because you're afraid to say no, or maybe you just don't even know how to say no, you're actually not even doing something good at all, even if on the outside it looks like it. A life coach by the name of Fiona Moss talks about how she overcame this state where she says she was exhausted, scrambling to keep her head above water, trying to be everything to everyone, and trying to do everything right. And she was trying to please, she says, everyone but herself. she at one point made a change, and part of her path to making a change here is she had to A, stop pleasing everyone, and B, had to say no more often. Is that you? I feel like we live in this state of perpetual stress and anxiety. And because of it, we've lost our sense of self, our own worth. We weren't created to be robots. Just like God created us with intellect and free will, God made us so that we can come to know something, the reasons why and how, and then freely choose it. You see, we become a slave when we just say yes to everything. We're not meant to be robots. Just like God didn't make us robots to perfectly obey his every commandment, so why would we do that to ourselves? Do you want to be healthier, stronger, healthier, energetic, hopeful? Then appreciate the freedom that God gave you. Let's not make slaves of ourselves. I was recently reading an article from NPR where they were talking with Natalie Liu, who's a life coach, and she works with the people pleasers. She's been featured in Women's Health Magazine, NPR, Good Housekeeping, Glamour, Cosmopolitan Magazine, you name it. There are a few key things that stood out to me in what she said. She recommended that in order to start to change this dynamic, we have to have a period of self-observation. It's a week where we start to record our yeses and our nos. How did we feel when we said yes or no? Were we stressed? What types of requests were we responding to, and what types of people? Maybe it's the same person over and over again. Then she talked about how we should start noticing, or after that week of observation, start saying no a certain number of times. Maybe you have a goal of like 10 times, I'm going to say no to people this week. Maybe it's just specific people you need to say no to, or particular situations that are a weak point for you. Then she goes on to talk about, and this is important because like any behavior modification, there's going to be a transition period, a different feeling, a difficult feeling. You might even find yourself bored or free or confused as to what to do with this new time. So then from here, Natalie Liu, the life coach, starts to recommend that we begin to understand what you can and can't do within reason as you start saying no. You start to have this sense of, you know, how much can I actually take on my plate? What do I actually need to get done that's not getting done? That's causing me, as St. Edith Stein often talks about, when people atrophy. St. Edith Stein actually talks about how women in the workforce is one of the great gifts of that female complementarity to men in any environment. Because women have this distinct ability to see the person and to draw the person out of this almost workaholism or overcommitment that will lead to a person atrophying. I love that she uses that word, to atrophy. So as you begin to understand what you're capable of within reason, do you notice maybe those times throughout the week, particular situations or with specific people where you feel trapped? Was your energy being leached from you? How was your mental, emotional, and physical response? I'll never forget there was this client I had that I was working with some years ago. It was a personal training client with Pilates, and she had herniated discs in her back, was struggling with her weight, was lonely. One of those people who used every possible form of treatment to care for her. She loved that attention from people, but also had a lot of ailments as well. And she was an absolute drain to work with. It was so difficult for me. I was physically exhausted. My face was drooping. I felt like I was leaning over sideways. The conversation just to speak was so taxing. At a certain point, I realized I've got another 4 or 5 more hours of teaching and interacting with clients. I can't teach this client because I'm dead after working with that one person. But we might make the reason, well, she really needs someone. She needs that attention. She needs that love. I can really make a change for her body. It's good money. And we can make all these reasons as to why we're still doing what we're doing. But at the same time, there's a certain point where we have to say no, because that's what's best for us. And so the challenge is here is, before you say yes next time, pause. Ponder whether or not you really do have to say yes in this situation. And a brief thought on obligation. Obligation doesn't mean we should be a slave to something. There may be a sense of responsibility, but we should take responsibility with honor. We should be much obliged to do something. There's this part where not only is it an obligation, but to be obliged, I want to or I'm compelled to do something. So don't let yourself be bogged down by responsibility and obligation. Recognize, no, this is good for me to have obligations. But don't create obligations where there aren't any. And when you do let go of those false obligations or that false guilt and so forth, it's going to put you in a better place to be more respectful and appreciative of those obligations you do have, because they will transform you. It's something you can and should take on. So I challenge you in this art of saying no. We're going to talk more about joy later on. What's the difference between joy and happiness? We often talk about that here on Trending, and I want to dive into it a little bit more in just a second. My guest today is Father Simon Isaki. Now, Father Simon Isaki is a, can we go way back? We went to undergrad school and grad school together studying theology at John Paul the Great Catholic University. When he was a seminary, I was in undergrad as well, and life has changed so much during these times. Father Simon, we've been facing so much turmoil here in the church, and many people are discussing how it's impacting their happiness, their ability to cope and move forward throughout the day. I wanted to bring you on because you recently experienced, you're a Chaldean Catholic priest here in San Diego, and you're at St. Peter's Catholic Church, and there's recent vandalism that occurred there at the cathedral. Can you share with us a little bit about what happened?
Yes, of course. And first of all, I just want to say hi to Marie, and I hope that you and Gabriel are doing very well. Long time no see. And I love the work that you are doing with Relevant Radio and to try to spread the gospel message. So thank you for that. And I'll just say that the other day on Sunday, early Sunday morning, so basically in the middle of the night on Saturday, some people snuck into the Chaldean Cathedral here in San Diego. It's home to thousands of Chaldean Catholics who come here to worship and pray. And it's actually been around for over 30 years, and nothing like this has ever happened before until now. What happened was people walked in and they vandalized the whole front wall of the cathedral, including actually also the front floor of the church outside. And they put a bunch of random symbols that have to do with a lot of what's going on in the political world today. We don't really know what it means. We don't know who did it, but the police are investigating it. A lot of people came around the church and helped to clean the morning after, and a lot of people have been showing support for the church. So we thank God for that.
Father Simon, it's incredible because people think that there's just kind of one mob movement behind everything, but even just looking at the destruction done there to the church, and if you're just joining us, you can actually go and head over to my Instagram story where I post a link to the video with everything from swastikas to Black Lives Matter, white power, Biden 2020, all these different words thrown up on top of the church, including, I think, the sign of Satan, as well as an upside down cross. And it's shocking to me, Father Simon, that this happened specifically to the Chaldean Catholic Church, because your people fleeing from Iraq have faced so much persecution in the name of faith. And you'd think that here in the United States, there would be a place of freedom of worship and respect and integrity in situations like that. But that's not what we're seeing. So what's kind of been your community's response over the shock of being targeted?
Yeah, definitely. So I just want to share something about my experience about what you mentioned about how our Chaldean Catholic people have been persecuted. And really, a lot of the Christians in the Middle East have been and continue to be persecuted for their faith. And just one thing that I saw something very similar to what happened to my cathedral. When I was in Iraq about a year and a half ago, I got a chance to witness a beautiful event when actually the Chaldean Church ordained a new bishop for the Diocese of Mosul, which had been overtaken completely by ISIS. And after 5 years, it got rebuilt, and so for that process, we reestablished a bishop there. But I went around and I saw the destruction that ISIS did to a lot of the Chaldean Catholic villages over there. And one of the things that I saw was that they had vandalized the churches and the monasteries. And on some of them, they put on the walls, property of the Islamic State on the church walls. And they also used the church walls as target practice. And so there were a lot of bullets. And basically, I saw homes destroyed. And basically, the reaction of our people here in San Diego to this was that we first of all thank God that nothing happened, that anybody was physically harmed with these evil attacks. And we remembered what our people are going through in Iraq and what Christians are going through throughout the whole world. And it was just a reminder for a lot of people to pray for those people that are being persecuted and to also pray for those who are doing the persecution, because we know that they really need God's grace and His peace.
That's Father Simon Asaki, a Chaldean Catholic priest at St. Peter's Cathedral here in San Diego, which was vandalized over the weekend along with a number of other churches, actually even another here in San Diego as well. And I'm looking at what's happened, and I'd like to hear your take on this as to why St. Peter's was targeted. Do you think there was a reason, or is this just more of the anarchy that's been occurring?
Yeah, like you mentioned earlier about the randomness of the messages that they put on the church, we don't really know who directly did this. We don't know what the motive was. And we really honestly have no idea why they chose St. Peter's. And they also did another church. It was a Syriac Catholic church. So it's two Eastern Rite Catholic churches that are, you know, based in Iraq and Syria. So we don't really know. The police are investigating both incidences. We do know that they are linked, and the churches are actually just a few miles apart from each other. So the police are investigating it. We got a lot of evidence of what happened, and so we'll be finding more in the coming days.
So we'll stay tuned for an update as to if they find who did this. I know there was surveillance footage that was posted from one of the other priests there at St. Peter's. Father, what should our response be as we're facing this ongoing attack and persecution at the Catholic Church that is arbitrary at times, not a clear reason? How do we respond? What's your response been to this?
I want to mention something based on the gospel, and this was actually the gospel reading for yesterday in the Chaldean church. It was Jesus's parable of the weeds among the wheat, and he spoke about how the wheat, the good seeds, are planted by the Son of Man himself, and the seeds are the children of God. And on the other side, the weeds, which is basically the poison that the enemy plants, are planted by the devil, he says, and that the bad seeds are the sons of the evil one. And so what we can do ourselves as members of the body of Christ, I think the main thing that we can do is to try to plant seeds of the gospel everywhere we go, and not to wait for the people that do evil things to change, but to change ourselves first and to see how we can better ourselves, how we can be more holy, and how we can more faithfully represent the message of Jesus Christ to this world that is in real need of holiness and of true saints. So I think we need to be saints ultimately, and I think that is the best and the only option that we have with everything going on in this world.
If you're just joining us, that's Father Simon Asaki of St. Peter's Chaldean Catholic Cathedral here in San Diego that was vandalized over the weekend. And you may think, Father Simon, and if you're a little younger, you might be asking the question, is that the TikTok priest? I know a number of people have been asking that today leading up to the show. Just briefly, we'll come back to what happened over the weekend. Why TikTok? Why have you chosen to reach out to so many people via TikTok? And what has the response been?
Yeah, so actually, it was because of COVID. So, you know, things come out of COVID, and this is one of them. And I think it's a good thing, because by the grace of God, I'm really trying to reach a lot of people through TikTok. And I really didn't even know how the app worked. And when I started it in March, I was one of the only priests on the app. And so a lot of people were just interested once they saw a priest on the For You page. They saw my collar and they just apparently wanted to hear what I have to say. And so a lot of people started following me. And obviously some of the teachings of the Catholic Church are controversial, especially when it comes to what the world says. And so I'm obviously teaching what the Catholic faith professes. And so some of those things got very controversial. And so around June, actually, I made a video on gay pride marriage. Month and what the Catholic response should be.
Oh, you took a lot of flack.
yeah. And I basically just said what the church officially teaches on the topic, how we should love everybody but not endorse them in their sin. And actually, TikTok, they shadow banned me permanently from what I saw, which means that they were not sending out any of my content to their public pages anymore. So I had to make a new account, and I did. And so now I'm back to a new account and still posting messages of the gospel and trying to interact with people of all different faiths.
For those who aren't familiar with TikTok, TikTok is one of the latest social media apps sharing short videos often put to music or silent, very short clips with profound teaching that you've done. And it was fascinating back in June during Gay Pride Month, the response that you received. I mean, I think if I remember correctly, even some of your families, your sister who's a dear friend of mine, others, you know, were being threatened by people for you having put this up on social media. And it reminds me of kind of this question that has occurred a lot over the last few weeks during our happy hour. Sharon and Olivia asked it last week on Instagram yet again. My happiness is being impacted essentially by what's happening in the church, the persecution, the state of people in the world. How do you, and especially someone who's coming from the Chaldean Catholic faith and the persecution there in Iraq and the lack of religious freedom, how do you remain joyful in the face of trying times, whether it's from Iraq or even being persecuted for just sharing the truth and love of the gospel message through TikTok?
Yes, so I would want to go back in answering the question to even before the Iraqi Christian persecution, but to go way back to the beginning of the first Christian persecution of Acts of the Apostles and the apostles and the first Christians, how they were persecuted. And there's a verse in the beginning, one of the first few chapters of Acts that doesn't come to my memory right now, but it's in the first 4 or 5 chapters of the book, for those of you that want to go check it out. It points out that after the apostles were preaching the gospel and after they were being physically punished and verbally punished as well and being warned to not speak in the name of Jesus, it says that they left, and it says that they rejoiced because they were counted as worthy of sharing in the suffering of Jesus. So their rejoicing and their joy is our inspiration, that we are sharing in the suffering of Jesus Christ. And that is what the Christian life is. It's what Jesus tells us when he says what the conditions of discipleship are, that we have to take up our crosses and follow him and do everything that we can to live in unity with him. And so we have to rejoice in our sufferings, as St. Paul says, and try to use it to sanctify ourselves and to sanctify this world.
That's Father Simon Osaki here on Trending with Timory. A college reunion for the two of us. We'll have to do this again, Father Simon, very soon. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back here on Trending with Timory.
Day 21, Virgin Most Powerful, pray for us. We've all heard stories about how a mother can have almost superhuman strength when it comes to protecting her young child. Well, Our Lady has more than superhuman strength when it comes to protecting us. She has supernatural strength. So if you need something, pray the rosary every day for that intention. There's a story that's told about a handsome young man who married a beautiful young woman and then shipped off to war a few days later. Away from his bride in the terrible jungles of the South Pacific, they pray the rosary for each other every night. That mutual daily recitation of the rosary for each other became their lifeline for hope. 4 years later, he returned, safe and sound, after World War II from the jungles of New Guinea, one of the few men of his company to survive. and he credited it all to Our Lady, the Virgin Most Powerful, and the daily recitation of the Rosary. Virgin Most Powerful, pray for the Church and our nation.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Joy, happiness, what's the difference? I have to just make a comment here before we move on. If you missed my last guest, Father Simon Isaki, here on Trending, not only was it a fun college reunion for me, he's known both my husband and I since before we even dated. I went to school together when he was in the seminary. He's now a priest here in San Diego. And what always stands out to me in such a profound way is how the Catholics from the Middle East, such as the Chaldeans, you heard him at the end of that segment talking about how it is our joy to suffer and be persecuted. They have such joy. They get it. Our life is for us to be with God. And no matter what our path to him may be, painful or comfortable, that's where we should be oriented, and it should be our joy to go there. And so when we talk about joy versus happiness, there's a lot that could be said. And we're going to break down the difference in just a little bit, along with how that relates to handling toxic people and staying happy from a Catholic perspective. Because it's not just taking them out of your life. That's part of it. Or it's not just limiting time. We can go through all of that. But I first want to get to this. I received a question recently about how happiness can be lost in so many situations. And, you know, what happens if this is impacting my happiness? And what happens if that's impacting my happiness? And a couple of questions I received recently really stood out to me. And I mentioned it earlier on. What happens when I'm overwhelmed by the craziness in the church and society in our country? There are four things I want to recommend that you work on doing. And I have to work on these each day. Number one, it's okay to turn off the news. We are so inundated with the problems and crisis of the world. We don't hear the good news when we're checking in and reading every news article, Instagram story, and Facebook post. So turn it off more. Limit your time. Maybe you don't even look at it for weeks. I know that's hard. We're coming up on an election, but I'll give you a little hint here. When you turn off the news of what you're consuming, trust me, you're going to be up to date if you are interacting with people face to face. You'll know what's happening in the world. And if you don't hear about it, it's probably not that important. Number two, we also have to shut down some of the conversations we're involved in. Sometimes there are certain conversations that just aren't productive or going to impact our bottom line in terms of our ability to just function and not be distracted. You know how they'd say for married couples, like make sure you talk about money, for example, and you don't just like avoid the conversation. Great. But they also say, don't talk about money right before you go to bed, for example, because you might not be able to sleep. You might get into a fight. You might be exhausted from the day. Well, just like that boundary of when and where you talk about something, you have to have that boundary about who and when you talk about things. It's going to help you to stay happy in the face of everything that's going on. Number three, that also dives into the fact that we have to create a filter. And I'm not telling you to live in a bubble, but I am saying, yeah, turn off the news. Limit some conversations. Stop following certain people on social media. Number four, we need to pray for the three theological virtues of faith, hope, and love. These come as gifts from God, and they're to be developed and grow in prayer. These three theological virtues will help us to be full of faith in the midst of everything we experience. Full of hope and gracious in the love we have for others, but most importantly, first of all, for God, for ourselves, and then our neighbor. Because if we don't have this in proper context, we're going to struggle throughout our week, throughout our day. That being said, I want to talk about another topic. I asked the question recently, what's getting in the way of your happiness? And this question really stood out to me because I, too, have recently lost a loved one. And we went through a tragic suicide a handful of years ago in my own family. Very sorrowful circumstances. And I have a lot of friends and family who are surrounded by a lot of loss right now. And so Amaryl on Instagram said this. She said, "My husband stepping away from the church is affecting my happiness. He refuses to go." Another said, "Her spouse's death has impacted their happiness, and they're having a difficult time because they're so heartbroken over the loss of a loved one." Let's take that second question first. Thomas Aquinas talks about why sorrow arises. Maybe you've lost someone in your family, a close friend. Maybe you've even just lost a friendship that you had, not even the death of someone. You're mourning that friendship. Thomas Aquinas says that sorrow arises from love. If we were to break that down, this is because the thing that is loved is either absent from us, or what we love is perhaps being afflicted by evil in some way. And perhaps there's been some cause for separation, whether on your part or theirs, or maybe you're just two people who grew apart. Maybe there has been death and you're mourning the physical loss of their presence. This is where faith, hope, and love come into play. We as Catholics have hope in the resurrection, and we prayerfully intercede for our loved ones who have died out of an act of love for them and hope in God, in his promise of resurrection for those who have been faithful. But also we have to remember that our joy can't be destroyed. And we're going to talk about what the difference between happiness and joy. If you don't know what it is, we'll talk about that in a minute. But joy cannot be destroyed because joy is a virtue. It's a gift from God and it stems from our love for God. As I said, we'll talk about this more later, but if we're really focusing on joy and not just how I feel happy at the moment, you're going to see you're able to maintain this baseline through the sorrows of life and through the happiness of life and everything we experience. Sorrow should always be temporary. And it's true because we're missing someone we love, but we have to remember our happiness is not contingent upon other people. And this is why I want to come to this question on Instagram from Amaryl about how her husband stepping away from the church is affecting her happiness. He's refusing to go. And we have to talk about this from the perspective of our happiness is not contingent upon any other human being. Even in marriage, our happiness cannot be contingent upon whether or not that person's happy with us, sad with us, angry, stressed, refusing to go to church. As heartbreaking as it can be that our loved ones aren't going to church, maybe you have a son or daughter who's refusing to go, we still have to be honest with ourselves. And I think part of this is this acknowledgement that perhaps in their refusing to go to church, we're being honest with ourselves and acknowledging that there's been some sort of physical, emotional, or psychological distance has already been isolating them from their faith. Maybe some intellectual hurdle. A person who chooses to stop going to church, it's not just an isolated event. It's something that's been building for a time. And so when someone chooses not to go to church, I think it's an opportunity to say, okay, what can I do? How can I adjust now? Sometimes I think we allow ourselves to believe we're happy while not acknowledging or being honest with ourselves about a situation. It looks good on the surface, and so we can hold it together and be happy, but in reality, things aren't that great underneath the surface. That belief in the faith, is someone just going to go through the motions? And some might say, hey, that's great, at least they're showing up. Yes, but at least they're being more honest, and more people can lean in and help out when someone's refusing to go. So take fullest in knowing and acknowledge the big picture that more is going on than just the person not going to church. And my challenge for you is take joy in loving your husband in the face of the separation from church. This is what Christianity is all about, bringing Christ to others. That doesn't mean us taking the person physically to Christ, it's us taking Christ to others. And so I challenge you, pray for your spouse, but show your husband Christ by the way you interact with him lovingly. stepping outside of the box with humility, working on those things he brings up about you that he finds problematic. Be the change you want to see in that relationship. Set the example because your faith is what inspires you and your love is what inspires you. And so that faith and love shown in your actions will influence others. It's the science, the school of psychology, that even if one person in an unhealthy dynamic changes, the whole dynamic and the other people begin to change as well. And so I keep looking to 1 Peter, the other books of the scripture, and the challenge specifically given to Christian women in the early church was this. There was a fact that was happening of most of the Christians converting, people converting to Christianity were women. Because the Catholic Church, Christianity held women in such a high regard in a way that they hadn't been respected before. And so all these women were converted, their husbands were, or maybe they just kind of went along and they weren't quite there. And so St. Peter, the first pope, challenged women, convert your husbands by how you talk to them, how you interact with them, by your virtue, by your gentleness, by us bringing Christ to others, not forcing them to go to Christ. This will bring us authentic joy and happiness because we're doing it for the right reason, to bring Christ to others and to be that light in the world, to be that light in the darkness. So I challenge you, take back your freedom. Don't lose your joy because of the sorrow or because of the grief of others in the world. We're created with intellect and free will, which means we can come to understand something and freely choose it. And if we first choose God, everything else will fall into context. We'll be back here on Trending in just a little bit, talking about how we can specifically as Catholics manage toxic people in toxic situations and stay happy. We'll be right back.
Timmery will be right back. You can reach her on Instagram and Twitter at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
How do you manage toxic people and stay happy from a Catholic perspective? More than just what the psychologists are saying, how can we go deeper as Catholics? I was also asked a question on Instagram by Sergio, are joy and happiness different or synonymous? I was told joy is like an underlying feeling. This is a great question, and this gets at the heart of our weekly happy hour. Understand this, happiness is a fleeting and always changing emotion. You could be happy 1 second, sorrowful the next, giddy another, depressed, moody, anxious, you name it. But joy, on the other hand, is a virtue to be received from God, to be further developed and to grow. It's a gift. We'll talk about that more in relation to how do you manage toxic people and stay happy. I was recently reading from life coach Fiona Moss, and I shared a little bit of her story earlier at the beginning of the show, especially for those people who maybe struggle with saying yes all the time, being a yes man. She talked about how she was exhausted, scrambling to keep her head above water. She was trying to be everything to everyone, but not pleasing herself in any way whatsoever. She talked about how this manifested itself in weight issues. She became injured. It's the weight and the impact of her yes all the time began to impact her body and how it functioned, especially as women, a key sign if ovulation and our cycles are off. It's a sign that there's stress and too much going on in our life. This is why so many people struggle to conceive today, because that stress level is so high. She said, my body was literally screaming at me to stop. She recently put together a video on how to manage toxic people because she changed things. She learned to say no. She learned to take care of herself, and she's now a life coach. And when she was talking about how to manage toxic people and stay happy, she was talking about how those toxic people can be people who are negative, stressed. They moan and groan all the time, make you feel stuck. Maybe they insult you, put you down to build themselves up. One of the questions that she is asked most often is how to manage these toxic people. Fiona Moss came up with three ways to create boundaries. We'll talk about those three ways and then distinctly look at it from a Catholic perspective to go deeper than just these three life coach tips. Number one, she says, how much time do you spend with these people? Are you spending time with other people who grow you and not just those toxic environments and people? And how can you shift the dynamic to spend time around better people? This is a great question. And maybe you're not necessarily spending time around toxic people who are moody and grumpy, but maybe you're just spending time around people who have low values, no morality, no faith, and you're not growing. What are you going to do to change that? That's my challenge. Because good friendships, good environment, give us the opportunity to change and grow as well. True friendship, as we talk about all the time, under the guidance of Aristotle, the philosopher Aristotle, there should be a friendship of virtue. You're willing the good of the other person. Thomas Aquinas talks about this as well. The friendship is for their sake and your sake, but there's usually this common thread that holds the two of you together. There's this common focus in the relationship. I argue that should really be your faith. So number two, Fiona talks about ways to keep boundaries with other people is when you're with toxic people, what conversations elicit the negativity? Perhaps it's just certain topics. And maybe if you get one person on a topic, the whole night is ruined and that's the problem. So create boundaries, she said, around those conversations. Maybe you shouldn't discuss that particular topic with that person. Hey, we've got an election coming up. There are productive and non-productive conversations that can occur surrounding an election. Not that we shouldn't be evangelists and talk about the important moral issues that we are going to vote on as a church, but sometimes just bringing it up and arguing again and again and again with certain people isn't really that helpful for us or for them. Number three, we have to consider in creating these boundaries the fact that their feelings are likely never going to change. If they're one of those people who, if it's a person who's just negative in general, stop trying to change them. You don't have to take that on. You also don't have to take on their emotion. You also don't have to be empathetic to the point of your emotions being impacted where you're now depressed and sorrowful and angry and so forth as well. But let's take this further from a Catholic perspective. How can we go deeper? I mentioned earlier the difference between happiness and joy. Happiness is a fleeting emotion that can change. I can be happy one second, giddy another, sorrowful, anxious. All these different things can occur. But joy is a virtue. It's a gift. So let's not feel stuck around toxic people and toxic situations. Let's talk about virtue and how this can change the whole dynamic even more so. Thomas Aquinas, St. Thomas Aquinas, points to Romans chapter 14 to demonstrate that joy is poured into us by the Holy Spirit. You see, Aquinas talks about how, quote, joy is caused by love. Now, the reason joy is caused by love, because it can be in the presence of that thing or person that's loved, or it can be by abiding in that love. He actually refers to enduring in love. This is where if we abide in Christ, if we endure suffering, even in the face of the worst circumstances, but if we do it out of love for Christ, joy is caused because of this. This is where Christianity can be so confusing. Where there is love, there is joy. When we're talking about love, we're talking about charity. Charity is the love of God, because there are different dimensions of love as well. Caritas in Latin, or agape in Greek. Charity is the love of God. Seeing others and yourself in this perspective changes the entire dynamic when we talk about toxic people. Because we love them because of the love God has for them. We should not feel stuck in them, stuck in their emotions, because we're separate human beings. But for some reason, we don't allow that separation to occur that's important and healthy. Yet we can take a Christ to them, as we talked about earlier, be that bearer of good news before them. In 1 John chapter 4, John, the beloved apostle, says that he that abides in charity abides in God, and God in him. In other words, our happiness should not be so impacted by the catastrophes of the world, the death of a loved one, so-and-so leaving the church, or the toxic attitudes of other people. Again, the Apostle John said, the beloved apostle, that he who abides in charity abides in God and God in him. If we have a love for that person, we're going to recognize that God has such a great love for us. He gave us human freedom. And who am I to take that freedom away from another person? And yes, it could break my heart that they are not choosing to go to church, or perhaps they've died, or perhaps they're living in a toxic environment, whatever it might be. We still can have a love for them out of respecting their freedom. And that's challenging. But that's what God's done for us. We need to pray for those gifts from God to continue to abide in his love joyfully. But if we do have that absolute love for God, that charity, that love of God, joy will remain in the face of these challenging circumstances and people that we have to manage. See, Thomas Aquinas says spiritual joy, which is about God, is caused by charity. So at the heart of this, where is our prayer life? Because if we are truly praying, for example, that rosary, when we're praying for the theological virtues of faith, hope, and love, charity, right? That last one, charity. We're going to see that not only will we become more charitable, more loving toward God, toward ourselves and neighbor, we will become joyful individuals. Charity is the love of God and seeing others and ourselves in this perspective. If we can see others and ourselves in this perspective, our joy will be complete. We will not be searching for answers in all the wrong places, no matter what state in life we're in, because we'll be so rooted in God. We'll understand the freedom that other people have, the freedom that we have, that we can defect and so can others, but that God's love always abides and remains and is there for us if we so choose to be with him. You're listening to Trending with Timory. We'll be back tomorrow with Jim O'Day talking about what happens when you lose your job or you're laid off. How do you bounce back?
Day 21, Virgin Most Powerful, pray for us. We've all heard stories about how a mother can have almost superhuman strength when it comes to protecting her young child. Well, Our Lady has more than superhuman strength when it comes to protecting us. She has supernatural strength. So if you need something, pray the rosary every day for that intention. There's a story that's told about a handsome young man who married a beautiful young woman and then shipped off to war a few days later. Away from his bride in the terrible jungles of the South Pacific, they'd pray the rosary for each other every night. That mutual daily recitation of the rosary for each other became their lifeline for hope. 4 years later, he returned, safe and sound, after World War II from the jungles of New Guinea, one of the few men of his company to survive. And he credited all to Our Lady, the Virgin Most Powerful, and the daily recitation of the rosary. Virgin Most Powerful, pray for the Church and our nation.